touring your beautiful country, was interacting with the local people and the local food, so it's great to be here. I hope you heard some key messages from Andy, and what you heard was a description of a community. I know it's easy to think of open source simply as free software, and it is, you can go download it. But Andy made some really interesting points, and the biggest one in my mind is the strength and vibrance of the community that works on the product, works on the code. And of all of the open source projects that interact with cloud today, OpenStack is by far the most active and most aggressive. For you, that means it's going to be the most innovative if you're a user of these technologies. If you're a developer, it means you're going to find the most challenging and interesting people to work with. So I would suggest be sure to look at the community that you participate with and one of the key elements of working in the open source area. I also see open source as one component of the necessary series of capabilities. We need open source. And we are choosing to implement a cloud to implement certain capabilities in our business. I think we know the common ones, agility, cost, time. I think we understand those. We look to open source specifically to give us some help in a few specific areas. I want a choice. I want some options. Like you're hearing OpenStack, you're hearing what you didn't hear was some of the things under the covers. Things like Nagios, perhaps Puppet, perhaps Chef. Other things that build out the solution, you get a choice. You also get to pick your suppliers. Maybe it's to reduce the dependency. Maybe it's to let you make the hour-by-hour choice, as Andy talked about. But you get a choice. And if you are a large enough organization where it makes sense for you to actually touch the code, you can do that. In some cases, you probably don't want to do that. But if you needed to, in the open source world, you can. And if you're a large business, to make a decision to go with something like OpenStack or Xen or KVM, that's a big decision. And knowing that you can open it up, and if you have to, fix your own bugs, that's a big deal. The last one in my mind is the reason we're here. It's all about innovation. It's one thing to pick up code and work with the community. But what I really want, and the thing that excites me about working in open source, is the fact that we have already seen that we are not done on the trail of innovation, on the string of new ideas and new capabilities. But so it's great to say we know what we're doing, but do we really know? Well, the Open Data Center Alliance has proposed a set of usage models, and Intel has embraced those and extended those. And we say these are the kinds of things we need to put very front and center in our implementation of our cloud. Some things may be not so obvious. So for example, carbon footprint. More and more around the world, we see the need to be able to report how much power translated into carbon was consumed by your resources in the cloud. Things like I/O control. Why? Well, because when you place a workload into a cloud, you may not want the best possible I/O performance. You may want to be willing to pay for something less. Or you may want extremely high performance and be willing to pay for that. You need those control capabilities. So I would suggest to you that these are a pretty complete list of the usage models you should look to implement in your cloud implementation. Notice that not all of these are, shall we say, in software, or maybe all of them in OpenStack or open source. They require a community, which may include hardware elements as well. And so I think it's important, and part of what I want to convey to you today is that there's a very broad ecosystem that we have to pull together and are working with to make this successful. And also to further submit that we normally think of clouds as being servers, network, and storage. But there are obviously aspects of security that matter. The isolation of users, the ability for administrators to log in with credentials. There are obviously aspects of group management, so when you come in through a portal, that you only see your resources, okay? And then there are clearly cloud-level applications, things like Hadoop that you will hear of this afternoon that play here. But there's two others I would ask you to consider as well. One around the data center. How do you build a data center that can be efficient? And there are now open public ways to do that. I would also ask you to consider how you connect the systems together to share resources. Maybe that's called a fabric. So it's more than just what we normally think of as compute network and storage. It takes all of these to come together. So what I wanted to do was touch in each of these areas and talk a little bit about the open source and the open activities in each area. For example, in servers today, servers tend to be highly optimized for the specific use. Maybe it's density, maybe it's low cost, but what they're generally not optimized for is scale-out activities. There are certainly examples of those that are emerging. We tend to find designs, server designs today, designed for something other than power. Generally not always power efficient. Some are better than others, some are certainly efficient. But in general, we struggle with things like building servers that have thermal shadow, or having very hot parts eat up yet another very hot part, which makes the fan work harder, which means they can't run the data center as well. That Facebook started, along with help from a lot of companies, including Intel. This is open source hardware design, open source data center design. So if you work on OpenStack and you want to see how to build a highly efficient data center, here's a way to go do it. Go to opencompute.org. You can find out how to build a very power efficient, very density efficient data center. So it's not, we're now beyond the realm of just software, we're getting to look at open source hardware. One of the things that Intel did with our partners about 2 years ago now was we designed some motherboards where there were no thermal shadows. So if you had a hot part, there was no other hot parts down there like that one. And what that lets you do then is you can do two things. You can either run the fans slower, or you can turn up the temperature in the data center. In the case of Facebook, they went so far as to not even use chilled water in their data center at all. They have no air conditioners to chill the water in the data center. It's all done with free air. And you get enormous savings. You can raise the capacity in the data center because you now have some thermal room to play with. You can decrease your cooling costs, operational. Can also decrease your cost it takes to build a facility. If you go to opencompute.org, you can see pictures of Facebook's Primeville data center. You can see pictures of this. This is open examples of how to build these kinds of solutions. As you build your workloads into your data centers, be aware that certain platform designs are more optimal for software than others. So you may find that you have bunch of very lightweight workloads. They can often use a lighter weight server, as we see in service providers that host very large numbers of websites. We also see certain types of workloads that need a great deal more compute. They need a great deal faster, lower latency connectivity. So again, as you select your place to run your workload, be aware that the workload type in which you're running can affect what kind of compute you select. Storage. Most enterprise storage today is still based on SANs. SANs work well and they're reliable. But as you go to build out your cloud, you will struggle with the cost and the lack of flexibility that's often found in SAN-based solutions. And that's why when we look at OpenStack, we find that there are block storage solutions and object storage solutions which offer a significantly lower cost option for how to build out very large scale storage systems. We find that the need to look for storage architectures other than secure relational databases, something called not only SQL or NoSQL, become an important attribute there. We also find that encryption shows up in storage. Now, you may wonder why encryption here, not in compute. I'll show you in a moment. Encryption is now something that should be done everywhere. As we look at the server, we find that it is the ideal platform to become the storage element. In fact, 80% of today's world storage runs on an Intel platform. It's already happening today. And we know how to build scale-out storage systems that are even lower cost, and we will see even more innovation here in the future. I talked to a number of the new OEMs, and one of the areas that they plan to innovate, and I'm certain will innovate, is in scale-out storage, both in lower latency, lower cost, better performance. This is just beginning. So if you haven't studied these NoSQL type scale-out storage, then you need to do so. One example, as Andy mentioned, is Swift, and it is production ready today. There are a number of production customers today running Swift, and therefore are examples of how to do large scale-out storage systems based upon IA architecture platforms. Encryption. Did you know that with today's Intel Xeon servers, it's faster to store the data encrypted than it was in the previous generation unencrypted, right? So if I can store it faster encrypted now than unencrypted before, as far as I'm concerned, there is no excuse. When you store your data, it should be encrypted. The open source libraries that implement this encryption are already in place in the industry today. The TLS libraries, part of the SSL suite, are already there, right? So think hard and long about storing the data in CLEAR. The open source libraries exist, so you should simply go do it. Networking. Networking is moving from 1 gig to 10 gig. No surprise to anybody there. Did you know how effective 10 gig is for implementing storage solutions? We see huge performance benefits, as I'll show you, in simply in storage solutions. We have, within Intel, demonstrated network I/O on the order of 30 cross-hops from receipt of a network packet on the wire to when the user mode application is able to process that network packet inside the virtual machine. So this is not bare metal. This is inside the virtual machine. Right, so I'm still using virtualization, yet my latency is on the order of 30 clocks on it. So it's, from my standpoint, when people say they can't run a latency-sensitive application in hypervisor, I laugh. We've solved that problem. That's done. And you should look to the networking solutions today to drive that. Clearly converging on a 10 gigabit fabric using Zen, SRIOV, using scale-out storage, you get a much denser, much higher performance fabric with a lot less cable. Typical enterprise servers will often have 7 connections to each server. With 10 gig, you can do it with 2 and get better performance. We've seen the I/O performance through SRIOV and VMVQ. Reduce the latency even when you're running in a virtual machine. So the open source solutions today lead the way in how to implement low latency on compute storage platforms today. This is one example of looking at fiber channel versus fiber channel over Ethernet. In this particular case at Yahoo, and they got better throughput running over much lower cost fabric than fiber channel. Fiber channel still has a lot of good uses, quite a number. For the cloud activities that I see today, 10 gigabit scale-out storage is by far the most successful way to implement things. I want to touch briefly on security, generally around something we call a hardware root of trust. When you implement a cloud today, you are often asked to go prove to your company that you implemented it as designed. And I will argue that with technologies we have in the silicon today, you can build from the hardware up a compliance proof that you implemented the systems the way you were told to go do and that they are currently being implemented that way in production. And so we have this capability, and the work of the community here in China is a long way down the road in making this worldwide activity in China. So look hard at the trust, not just in the software layer, but how you can anchor that within the software. Again, it's implemented in open source. There's a project called Open Attestation. I need to give that to the translator to translate. It's called Open Attestation. And it's a means by which you can get this hardware-based root of trust, again, an open source project. Much of what you're going to hear today on OpenStack is, of course, the management level. And that's very, very important. But there are other open source projects. And my colleague at Intel, Moon from IT, will walk you through our implementation. And there's more to implementing the cloud than just OpenStack. And from my view, that's good news, because everything we needed was in open source. And as Intel, we support all of those projects and are proud to do so. And we'll continue to work with our partners in the ecosystem on the open source projects. Hong, I'll let you go into more detail on the actual architecture. So with that, Hong, I would like to hand it over to my friend and colleague at Intel to talk about our specific implementation of an OpenStack cloud.